Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 30, entitled Lessons from the Afterlife, we chat with world-renowned psychic medium and Oxford-educated attorney, Mark Anthony. Mark Anthony, thanks so much for coming on our show today.
I appreciate that, Justin. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Can you just tell our audience, you know, a little more about your background and, you know, how you got into being the psychic medium slash Oxford educated attorney?
Yeah, it's been quite an unusual journey. The easy part is the psychic medium part, simply because I was born that way. Both of my parents had psychic and mediumistic abilities, and it's a genetic trait that runs in my family. And I discuss genetics and inherited traits in my book, Evidence of Eternity. And the way that works, Justin, is there's many things that we inherit. There's a reason that we look like our parents. Being right-handed or left-handed is genetic. And let's say being right-handed is what's known as a dominant genetic trait. In other words, 90% of the people in the world have that. A recessive trait, one which can skip a couple generations, would be something like being left-handed. Certain forms of intelligence, athletic abilities, musical abilities, intellectual abilities, and it appears psychic and mediumistic abilities as well. And when both your parents have a recessive trait, like my parents did, both being psychic, the likelihood of one of their children having that is very strong. So that's how that happened with me.
And, you know, obviously you may not know the answer to this, but, you know, where do you think that actually comes from, like this, you know, ability to have like psychic, you know, I guess powers or whatever you...
Well, I will call it an ability, and I do know where it comes from. In fact, in my book, Evidence of Eternity, I wrote about that in the chapter on interdimensional communication. In other words, that's what I call what I'm able to do. We live in the material world. Everything we know has form, substance, is solid, ergo material. That's why I refer to it as the material world. And the other side is what happens when people... bodies die, the energy, the soul, the spirit within them transfers to another form. And it's not as woohoo or as airy-fairy as people think, because the second law of thermodynamics and physics teaches us that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. And so our consciousness goes from this realm to another realm, and some people are genetically geared to being able to be sensitive to it. There is a gland in our brain known as the pineal gland, and it's a pea-sized brain right behind the middle of the forehead, the proverbial third eye. And just in people that are involved in yoga and chakras and that type of study – are all familiar with the third eye. In fact, the pineal gland is one of the seven endocrine glands in our bodies, and the chakras that people are aware of from yoga also line up with the seven endocrine glands in our body. And based on recent studies over the past couple decades, the pineal gland has both calcite and magnetite crystals in it. In other words, it's a form of a radio transmitter receiver in our head, which also regulates brainwave frequency, our ability to perceive light, and our circadian rhythms. Short, that is what enables some people to tune into, or rather be sensitive to, the presence of spiritual entities.
Okay, that's a very very good description of it, actually. And I guess it kind of makes sense if you think about it in that sense, where, you know, I guess if you can explain it in that way, it definitely makes sense. But, you know, there would be a lot of people, I guess, who would still be like, oh, you know, it's kind of a lot of mysticism, or, you know, kind of, you know, hype or stuff like that. But, you know, I tend to believe, you know, people are more like you. I believe that there is something like that.
Well, there's always going to be cynics and doubters. But the fact of the matter is, if we're in the year 1850 and I said, Justin, surrounding you are invisible waves loaded particles of intelligence and information, you'd be looking at me like, yeah, as if. But then within 50 years, the radio was invented. And we know that radio waves are energy, waves of frequency of energy that carry encoded information and bits of intelligence, or rather, you know, they're capable of transmitting information. So just because something may not be within a person's realm of experience certainly doesn't mean that it does not exist. If you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, visible light, in other words, what you and I can see with the naked eye, is just a minute fraction of what that is. Envision a yardstick. Take a yardstick and put it on a table, and then take a piece of dental floss and lay the piece of dental floss on top of the yardstick. The dental floss is the visible spectrum. The rest of the yardstick is the electromagnetic spectrum, the things we cannot see, gamma rays, X-rays, radio waves, microwaves, the ultraviolet waves, so on and so forth. Dark matter theorists are indicating that over 90% of the universe is beyond not just our naked eye, but beyond our technological capability to perceive. So there's a lot in the world around us and in the universe, and as the string theorists say, the multiverse is more than just one universe, many dimensions, that is completely beyond our capability to perceive and understand, and that certainly does not mean it does not exist.
Mark, what were some of your earliest memories, pertaining to this psychic ability?
When I was about 4, I started receiving visitations, if you will, from my invisible friends. And I'd sit there and talk to them and describe them to my parents. And I was really lucky because my parents were very cool about it, because they could see them too. So they knew, so they knew what was going on. They weren't like, oh God, he's great. But I do remember my mother saying, oh no. Not like it was a bad thing, but she was like relating to her childhood. And my dad, I remember he goes, oh geez, you know, because they knew that it could be difficult for me, but they never made it hard for me. They were very loving and supportive because they understood.
So, Mark, take us through that process. Is it like, like the movie like Ghost, where, you can just kind of like feel their presence, or like maybe hear them, or can you actually like see things?
Well, all of the above. Ghost is one of my favorite movies. I think Whoopi Goldberg did such a great job portraying a psychic medium. And in the movie Ghost, until the very end, neither she nor Demi Moore saw the spirit of the character Patrick Swayze played. For the most of it, she could feel and hear him. So those are the components of the sixth sense known as clairsentience, which means ability to feel, and clairaudience, ability to hear. Clairvoyance is the ability to see. And I see, feel, and hear spirits. Normally what happens is I get this tingly sensation. And the tingly sensation is because the spirit is pure consciousness. And when his or her energy is interfacing with mine, I get an electrical physiological response, which is the cold chills and tingling. That's why people, when they walk into places that are frequented by spirits and they feel cold chills, like, oh, it's evil. And, you know, see all those TV shows where they shake around the night vision goggles and everyone screams demon and goes running out the door. And it's entertaining, but it's hardly accurate, because just because something gives you cold chills and tingles does not mean that it's malevolent or negative in any way. It's a spirit reaching out to us, and we receive a physiological response, which is the same physiological response in the flight or fight reaction. So therefore, you immediately jump to the conclusion that it's negative. And once you begin to understand what's going on, the fear melts away into the realm of understanding. So when a spirit comes in, first I'll get the tingly, then I'll get a gender, and then I will see things, hear things, and feel things. I may see what they look like. I may hear things, messages, and I will feel, in most instances, how they died.
pertaining to the seeing and actually like hearing, is it like a voice in your head, or is it a voice aloud, and is it like a person you can actually see, or is it more like, you know, the picture of like that ghost that we all have in our heads of like, you know, kind of like a
Casper the friendly, or
exactly,
or Poltergeist the not so friendly ghost. Well, let's take it one step at a time. That's a great question, Justin. Let's take the visual first. The visual, there's two ways to perceive clairvoyance. One is known as objective clairvoyance. The other is subjective clairvoyance. Objective clairvoyance means that I see the spirit like standing in the room. And the reason it's called objective because it's possible for other people to see the spirit as well. And in recent studies conducted by the top near-death experienced researchers in the world who have all endorsed my new book, Evidence of Eternity, they're doing studies where people who are in the last stages of life, in other words, they're dying, and you always hear about people who are dying saying, oh my gosh, I'm seeing my mother, I'm seeing my grandfather. They're seeing people who have passed. Well, in several of the studies, family members, friends, hospice workers, medical personnel also see these spirits. So that's why it's objective, because more than one person could see them. Subjective clairvoyance, and in the work that I do, that's the vast majority of how I perceive the spirit, is in my mind's eye. I get, I see them like you would a vivid memory. In other words, for the benefit of the listeners, and your readers, think of the Eiffel Tower. Okay, can you see it in your mind's eye?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see things. And then with hearing, the hearing can be hearing thoughts in my head, similar to the voice that we normally hear when we're thinking. Sometimes I hear songs. I get a lot of songs which have significance. And then there's what I call a direct feed, where all of a sudden a wave of information comes through me, and I can describe what the spirit's personality was like when he or she was alive. I can give shared memories and insightful information about the person receiving the reading.
This is incredibly fascinating. It's always been really interesting topic to me. You know, I've always kind of believed in this stuff, and I always wanted to learn more about how it works. So this is really great, Mark.
Well, thanks. That's why I wrote Evidence of Eternity, is to remove the fear and superstition surrounding spirit communication and to explain it on the basis of science, theoretical physics, human physiology, and evidence. See, I'm not a woohoo, airy-fairy, you know, psychic. I'm an attorney, and evidence to me is key, not just in the courtroom, but also in presenting the reality of spirit communication. And so I like to study how it works and then explain it to people, because once people begin to understand, it really does remove the fear factor from the communication.
Mark, what are your religious beliefs? Does it coincide with, you know, your psychic abilities and, you know, what you know, maybe some of the insights that you have that other people don't?
What I have come to understand is that God exists in spite of religion, not because of religion. I was raised in the Catholic faith, and although my mother was also a psychic medium, she not only was a devout Catholic, but she was also fascinated by the life of Buddha and of the teachings of the Hindus. And so I was groomed to be a Catholic priest, and I had considered going into the clergy. And so from day one, I've always been fascinated with the study of God and religion. So yes, technically I'm a Catholic, but I refer to myself as an interfaith, person, a spiritual Catholic. And I believe that all religions are branches of one big tree, and it doesn't matter what you call God, just so long as you call.
Going along with that, can you communicate in any way with God, you know, more than the average person could, and, you know, with spirits in that sense too?
I don't know if I have any special track to God that anyone else have. And the reason that I say that is because we are all the children of God. We are all cells in the body of God, and we're all interconnected with God. I am more sensitive to the presence of spirits because of the way my brain is configured, but that does not make me special or better than anyone else, because Justin, I believe that every single human being has a special and unique relationship with God, because God is the light of peace, love, understanding, creativity, wisdom, healing, and the light is pure. We cannot pollute the light, however, we can block it. So whether or not you are blocking the light, that is up to the individual.
And as far as spirits, you obviously can communicate with them. What's the difference between being a medium and a psychic?
A medium is the ability to tune into the frequency known as the other side, which I refer to as interdimensional communication. In other words, let's say that our world, we exist in AM radio, and the other side, spirits, they live in FM radio, okay? And let's say that the two universes, two dimensions, coexist, but they both use energy, frequency, and intelligence, and occasionally they overlap. And therefore, that's interdimensional communication. Psychics tune into the energy of a person, place, or thing. So, in other words, if you want to know what's going on with your health, love life, career, and possibly your future, you may want to consult with a psychic. If you want to talk to loved ones who have passed, you want to see a medium. Now, let me throw in a proviso there. Make sure that you see a legitimate medium or psychic. Check the references, because there are people that you'll go to who will start telling you things like you are haunted, the loved one's soul is in peril, there's a curse on you, and I can lift it, and if you come three times a week for $700 a session, all right, those are con artists, those are charlatans, those are evil people. A legitimate psychic or medium, you'll get the references, and preferably from someone you know. Check if they have a website, read the website, check if they have books, and also check that person's reputation. And then, like for example, with me, I tell people, probably only need one session with me, but if you want another one, you have to wait a minimum of 6 months, because you need to grow and heal and progress in your journey through grief. And I don't solicit repeat business, but I do get a lot of people that want to come back to me, but I would never tell someone, oh yeah, you need to come every week for the next, 10 years at, you see that on TV a lot, where you get those psychic scams. It's just like getting a lawyer, getting a doctor, getting an accountant, getting a carpenter or anyone to render some type of service to you. You need to make sure that they're reputable and that they're genuine.
Mark, you kind of mentioned an interesting point. I guess you kind of hinted that some people are either or, like psychic or medium. You happen to be both, right?
Every medium has psychic ability, but not every psychic has mediumistic ability. In other words, I will get medical information about people. I will pick up future events about people and things like that. So, in Evidence of Eternity, I explain a premonition that I had in the first chapter, and also my mother. Man, Mom was really good at that. And a lot of times we're not even trying. It's just something that comes to us. But with psychics, they tend to not be able to tune into spiritual entities. It doesn't mean that maybe they can't evolve into that, but that's not their forte. So every psychic is not a medium, but every medium possesses psychic ability.
Okay, so would you say you more primarily you do work in the medium?
Yes. And that's I'm primarily a medium. I connect people with loved ones on the other side, and that's my forte. That's my specialization. And Justin, it is a very humble gift that I thank God for every day, because when I see or hear the pain in someone's life being diminished in some small way by realizing that life is truly everlasting and that their loved one did not disintegrate into nothingness, that's what it's all about.
What's the communication like when you are trying to – when you have, say, a client come to you and they ask you to communicate with a loved one who has passed? What's that communication like?
Well, I always explain to them initially what to expect, and I give them some examples of the type of things to be aware of. Then when I always start with prayer, because prayer raises vibrational frequency, and I ask God to send forth spirits for the highest of purposes to bring messages of love, healing, and resolution. And then I'll feel a spirit come in. I get the gender, and once I make contact, they're going to start increasing the amount of information that they give to me. And it's very likely in a one-on-one session to get more than one spirit coming through. I've had as many as like 22 spirits come through in a reading. I mean, recently I had 12 people, two dogs, and a cat come through. that was kind of, you know, and when people's beloved pets show up, that's always wonderful.
That's a good point. That actually raises a good question too. What's the afterlife like, and is there like a heaven, and is there a doggy heaven then?
It's very difficult for you and I or anyone in this world to understand what the afterlife is like, because in our material world form, in our human body form, we don't have an accurate point of reference. So spirits, many times they'll come through and they'll create a point of reference. Like they'll say, oh, I see them. They're sitting at this table and in front of this cafe, and somebody will say, oh, my gosh, that was my mother's favorite cafe. I had one reading where this guy comes right, you know, the spirit looks like him riding up on a horse, and it looked like it was like in Montana. And the client says, oh, my dad, that was his dream, was always to be in a cowboy movie. Okay. So what they're doing is they're creating a point of reference that you and I can relate to, because we don't know what it's like to be pure consciousness, pure energy, and live in a purely energetic environment. But they do, having had the experience, so they will create something we can relate to. Now, is there a doggy heaven? Animals do have souls. As a Catholic, I was raised that only people have souls, but that does not appear to be the case, because any being capable of the emotion of love is capable of communication. And the other side appears to be more like a continuum, as opposed to the traditional, if you're good, you go to heaven, if you're bad, you go to hell. So there's many gradients of it, and it does not appear that the spirits who go into, let's call them the lower levels, the lower frequencies, the ones farther removed from the white light, it's not a stagnant state. It appears that it's a constant. They're able to ascend and to move from one dimension to the other.
So I don't know if you've read the book, you know, Journey of Souls.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really fascinating. So is it something like that then? Is that kind of what you're, you know, describing?
Well, that's Mike Newton's take on it. I have my observations and my evidence, which has been endorsed by the top near-death experience and survival of consciousness experts in the world, which is, you know, what I've written in Evidence of Eternity.
Does it differ at all from that, or is it fairly similar?
Well, obviously, I think mine is closer to what it really is, but I don't discount what Mike Newton has said.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of great, you know, points, and thousands of hypnosis-induced you know, patients who kind of described a very similar, you know, type of afterlife. So it was really I don't know, you know, obviously no one really knows exactly what it is like, but I thought it was a really interesting take, and, you know, a well put together argument for what it could be like, you know, afterwards.
Yes.
But moving on, how do you help, you know, some of these people that come to you with their grief? Like, what do you kind of put them through, like, during one of your sessions, so that they're able to kind of cope with, you know, their loved one who they just recently lost, or someone who's kind of been, you know, weighing them down for years, and they can't really get over the grief of losing someone. What do you do with them?
Well, I always recommend that, because there's a lot of times right after the death of a loved one, people want a reading right away, and I encourage them to wait at least 6 months. Now, the reason for that is the spirits can communicate right away, but the person receiving the reading can be hysterical. They can be so upset that they're not going to get the maximum benefit of the reading. I think it's preferable if they can go through a period where they stabilize emotionally, so that then they can listen in a rational state. And I think that spirit communication is an important therapeutic step in the journey through grief, because it helps people understand that their loved one did not just disintegrate into nothingness, and that their relationship with the person who died has gone from one of a physical material world nature to one of a spiritual nature. And that helps people when they realize that God exists, heaven exists, our soul's immortal living spirit. We can communicate with those souls, and when it is our time, our appointed time to leave this world, we will see our loved ones again.
Mark, do you believe in reincarnation? Do you think our souls kind of come back again later on, or that we've had, you know, past lives before or something like that?
Absolutely, I believe in reincarnation and in evidence of eternity. I write about it, and I give two case studies. One is the most thoroughly and heavily documented case of reincarnation in modern history, and I explain also my research and observations in thousands of readings I've conducted, where the spirits who communicate all talk about, well, yeah, reincarnation's real. We come back. And earlier when I was talking about the other side, let's say, you know, somebody does something really negative. In the Christian Islamic sense and Islamic sense, there's a heaven and there's a hell. And if you're bad, you go to hell, and that's that. And the reality is that you can go into a level that is removed from the white light and the purity of the higher frequencies of the other side, the heaven dimension, if you will. And instead of there being a hell, there is reincarnation, and you come back into this world, and we go through a succession of lifetimes. And the belief in reincarnation is not just something confined to New Age followers. The Hindus and the Buddhists, certainly for thousands of years, have believed in it. In early Christianity, in the first 300 years of Christianity, the great Christian theologians, particularly Origen of Alexandria, wrote that we go through a succession of lifetimes before we are to be with God, and that even Satan, he said Satan, Lucifer himself, will eventually ascend from the pit and be with God. And it was in the 6th century at the 5th Ecumenical Council in Constantinople where reincarnation was banned. And we could talk about that all day. Even in the ancient mystical sect of Judaism, the Chassidic sect, there's discussion of living a succession of lifetimes. So the fact of the matter is, Justin, that reincarnation is not only at the basis of all religions, it's also the laws of physics, is that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So apparently we keep coming back until we get it right. And then when we get it right, the big question is, what then?
Yep. And what do you think happens to, you know, I guess, energy, souls, people who commit suicide? What is their soul goal in the afterlife?
We all know somebody who has committed suicide, and it causes so much pain and grief and sadness that all the religions are really dead set against it, no pun intended. I mean, even the very tolerant Buddhists are very much against suicide. And I have seen in my work, as have the great near-death experience researchers, that there is no one-size-fits-all for suicides, and that if you commit suicide as a form of revenge upon somebody, and do it with the intention of hurting and inflicting pain upon people, that's a lot different than somebody who is terminally ill with absolutely no hope and excruciating pain, or somebody who is so mentally distraught. And in the vast cases of people who have committed suicide, their perceived reality is so horrifying and so hellish that as far as they are concerned, there is no other escape other than to cease their consciousness.
Fascinating take on, you know, what happens to them, and I guess whether it's malicious intent behind, you know, the suicide, or whether it's just kind of something that's, I mean, you really can't say unless you know for sure, like, what someone else is going through. I mean, I can think of, you know, things like people like Robin Williams or something, like people, you know, often like knock him and, you know, why he did it and everything, but nobody really knows what was going through his head at the time, you know, what pain he was suffering. You can't really place yourself in someone else's shoes to know what they were thinking, and I guess it's up to God to really decide that on his own.
It is. I was interviewed on CBS television in Houston on Great Day Houston about Robin Williams' suicide, and that really hit home for everybody. I mean, whether you love them or not, I mean, we've all seen Robin Williams movies. Personally, I was a huge, huge fan. I mean,
me too, yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he was the genie in Aladdin. He was Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, you just think of all the zany roles that he played, and he was a great dramatic actor. Robin Williams, he made us laugh. He made us cry. He made us think. And it felt like a death in the family. Mm-hmm. And it brought out that even somebody so hysterically funny is plagued by the depths of sadness. And he also, now we know that he was in the stages of Parkinson's, and that he had always grappled with severe depression and drug and alcohol addiction. So he had his pain and his suffering, and no matter how funny he was, when he was not on stage, he was being dragged down into the pit of despair. And for people who have committed suicide, we have to struggle to understand, and not only to forgive them, but in many cases to forgive ourselves, for, because so many people say, I didn't do anything. I should have been there. Well, the fact of the matter is, these things are going to happen. And we all wish that we had godlike powers where we could swoop in and change the past and save the day at the last moment. But we don't. We're human. And so many people struggle with that guilt. And part of what I do in communicating with souls who have committed suicide is to help survivors understand why this happened, and hopefully to alleviate some of the pain and suffering that they are enduring.
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now.
It's kind of like a hypothetical question, but I guess if you wanted to, say, reach out to someone who has passed away, say someone like a Robin Williams or something, would you need, say, a family member to come to you first so you can, like, you know, bring his spirit to communicate with you? Or could you just, like, kind of hypothetically, you know, be like, try to reach out to Robin and be like, oh, why'd you do that, Robin? Like, what were you going through? Like, and try to communicate with him that way?
I believe that a family connection is necessary. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of mediums and ones on TV say, Heath Ledger, after he died, came to me. And that person had never had any connection with Heath Ledger or Robin Williams or anybody else. Or they say that, the spirit of Marilyn Monroe comes and talks to me. Well, it's entirely possible, but the way you have to look at it, and the way I see it, is that the spirits on the other side, they need to have a motivation to communicate with me. And so if I was doing a reading for you and you wanted to communicate with a loved one on the other side, that loved one, that person who loves you, is motivated to talk to you. You know, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Jimi Hendrix, or Eleanor Roosevelt doesn't really have that much of a motivation to want to talk to you or me.
Yeah. That makes sense. Totally. Does everyone have a bit of psychic ability in them? I know you mentioned the pineal gland earlier, the third eye. Do people have like a touch of this, or is it more genetics, like you said earlier, too, as well, like where people either are born with it or they're not?
Everybody is capable of having a psychic or mediumistic experience, but that does not mean that everybody is a psychic or a medium. In other words, you and I can both swim, but we can't be Michael Phelps, okay? I mean, I can play tennis, but I'll never be Novak, okay? And, you know, I can do math, but I'll never be a Stephen Hawking or a Richard Oppenheimer. So we all have varying abilities, but yes, we are all capable of having a psychic or mediumistic experience because we all have the same basic physiological equipment.
Can people, you know, work on this? I know if you, you know, practice math or practice tennis, you obviously get better at it. Is there a way to, like, practice being psychic?
Prayer and meditation.
Okay. And what would that look like? Is it just
praying raises your vibrational frequency? And it's been said that prayer is when you talk to God. Meditation is when you listen. And through meditation, you develop your ability to listen, to focus, and to perceive. And you know, you also have to realize whether or not you possess the capacity. Now, meditation is important for a lot of real prayer. All right, let's take prayer. Prayer is very important. Always pray. Okay. Never hurts to talk to God. I remember reading a story about Marco Polo when he went into the court of Kublai Khan, and Kublai Khan said to him, "There are three prophets worshipped in my empire, Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad. And I pray to each one of them every night because I do not know which one it is that I will face." I always thought that was great. That's great. But you know, however you wish to perceive God, you know, you should pray. Meditation is being recommended now by a lot of corporations for their CEOs. It calms them down, it relaxes them, and it makes them more productive. In fact, there's even grade schools where children are learning to meditate, and it's making them more productive. So the way I look at meditation, it's kind of like it gets all the funk and gunk out of your head. Think of your consciousness as a blackboard, and from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed at night, everything that you think, feel, and experience, you write down. So by the end of the day, it's just a jumble. And meditation gets you to erase that so you can focus on one or two things. It's also good for reducing anxiety, which is always a positive thing.
What's the best way to meditate? Is it doing something more like yoga where you can kind of relax but also like be kind of active and do something, or is it more of like just listening to like relaxing music and just kind of being in peace and quiet?
Well, there's several different ways to meditate, and whatever works for you. I mean, there's some people that want to meditate all day long and try to levitate the Pentagon and you know and all this. I like my meditations to be 5 to 10 minutes, where basically I take myself into a higher level of consciousness and relax and just you know, breathe in. Just imagine breathing in white light and exhaling all the tension and negativity until any anxiety goes away, and then just open up your mind. And then there's some people that want to have guided meditations where, you know, they say, oh, I'm focusing on a rainbow or a bright light or whatever. And then there's other folks that, well, like you said, just listen to some relaxing music and just clear your head. I think it's finding the technique or the style of meditation that works best for you.
Great. Mark, what's the most remarkable psychic-related thing you've ever done?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. There are, you know, I don't mean to say, oh, there are so many, but, mm-hmm. but there are so many, Justin. Yeah. You know, I think this might be it, or one of them. couple years ago, I was in Boston, and I was doing readings for a crowd of people, and there was a little girl there. She was probably about maybe 11 years old, and I started describing the spirit of a woman who came through, and she raised her hand. She goes, "That's my grandmother," and I said, "Are you here with somebody?" And her mother said, "Yes, she's here with me," because I'm not going to do a reading on a child. I think that, you know, it's there are ethics involved, and that, you know, you need to have, you know, parental supervision. Mm-hmm. And this was in front of a crowd of people, and I described the grandmother, and I could see this little girl looking at me, and her eyes just – they went from this so sad look where I saw some tears being shed, and I explained how much her grandmother loved her. And then I said, "She's talking about your two cats and how they have really weird names." Okay. And the little girl goes, "They're named Cowboy and Dingo." And everybody started laughing. And she goes, "It is Grandma." And how her grandma used to teach her those couple things that she used to teach her. So the evidence was coming through to verify this. And the little girl just cried and cried, and she hugged her mother. And when it was over, she came up and she hugged me. She said, "Thank you." And her mom came up to me after that and said, "God bless you." And I said, "Why?" She said, "I haven't seen her laugh since my mom died." She said, "I'm a single parent, and my mom lived with us, and she was helping raise my girl, and she was always there for her, and then she had a heart attack and died. And since that time, my daughter, she's been severely depressed. We've been in therapy. She's been in all this treatment, and nothing has helped." And she says, "And tonight, she's smiling." She said, "I can never thank you enough." And Justin, that was one of the most humbling experiences of my life, to see that little girl go from being in a state of severe depression to realizing that her grandmother was still with her spiritually.
That's great. That must have been, you know, such an awesome feeling to be able to help that little girl like that. It just sounds like she was so sad. It's like a sad story even to, like, listen to that. But, I mean, it has a really good ending.
It is, and you know, I've done readings for famous people and politicians and movie and TV stars and all that, and I guess I could, you know, have told you the stories about that. But when I think back, that's what this is about. It's about helping people and helping them understand. And normally I don't do readings for children, although I've had many readings where parents come and they bring their children who are very open to this. And, you know, I think it's great. I mean, that's how I was. I was never afraid of this sort of thing. I know there's a lot of people that have their religious and fear-based belief systems that close them down from doing this, and that's their choice.
Mark, have you ever been afraid of, like, a spirit that's contacted you, or excuse me, or like a spirit that you've seen that you weren't, you know, intending on talking to or communicating with?
No, I've never been afraid of a spirit, but I've done readings where some unsavory people came through, and these are chronicled in both my books, Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity, when spirits of murderers have come through, usually and pretty much always to beg forgiveness for what they've done. And I've connected with some pretty icky some pretty I don't know if icky is the right word, but some pretty foul people that have done some really, really detestable things. They don't scare me, because, you know, I'm the one that's in control. And also their purpose for communicating is not to frighten or intimidate people, but it's to let people here know that they're no longer plagued by the evil desires and the impulsive behaviors or the mental illnesses that drove them to do these heinous acts.
So do you think everyone is good, innately good anyways?
Well, I would say in the spiritual sense, you know, our spirit, we're all cells in the body of God. And it's what I was talking about earlier is that we're all interconnected to the light, and we cannot pollute the light. However, we can block it. And the other night I was in Colorado giving a talk, and I said that, you know, the person that killed the four Marines recently, and the shooter in Aurora, and the kids at Columbine, and the 9/11 terrorists were scum. Okay. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, you know, you really need to avoid being judgmental like that. It's like, excuse me, I was a prosecutor, I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I've heard all sorts of excuses my whole life for why people do things, from, oh, I had a bad childhood, to, oh, I have a drinking problem, to, oh, I'm schizophrenic. But the fact of the matter is there are innocent people who are dead because of somebody's self-centered, ego-driven, mentally unbalanced behavior. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but some people in this world are just evil, and we have to have the fortitude to say that. It is, you know, on the other side, that's a whole different story. But in this world, evil does exist. Now, is there a central command of evil with a guy with, you know, horns and a pitchfork like a James Bond villain? No, I don't believe in that. I believe that evil is caused by the human ego. And when we act out of a self as center of the universe in a pure self-centered manner, that's when evil occurs. Because when you act out of love and compassion for those around you and for your fellow human being, in other words, if you treat others the way you want to be treated, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So my theme, if you will, is that we should be nice. And that's what every religion teaches. Be nice. A lot harder than it sounds.
Yep. Mark, what are your thoughts on hauntings, you know, like ghosts and you know, even demons and things like that, that actually, like, terrorize people or haunt people? Do you believe in that as well, or is that kind of just all
I've been on several paranormal investigations, and there's people that say, oh, there's demons and devils and all that. And what happens is when a spirit communicates with us, they're pure consciousness. And so when their energy field interfaces with our energy field, you get an electrical physiological response, which is tingling and cold chills, which is the same response in the fight or flight reaction. And I know I mentioned this before, but people immediately extrapolate that into it's negative, it's evil, therefore I must be afraid and run. And when I've encountered those entities, I've realized that the vast majority of the time they're like, why is everybody so afraid of me? I'm just trying to communicate. Mm-hmm. So, and I've also been part of an investigation where they're using K2 meters, which was cool because it starts picking up on all this electrical activity in the room. And then the EVP, the electric voice phenomenon, and somebody said, it's a demon. Everyone started screaming, and I was listening to it. And I said, I thought it said Steven. and someone else goes, I thought it said Steven too. And they're like, no, it said demon. I said, no, I think it's a male energy with the name of Steven. And the ghost hunter got all annoyed with me. He goes, don't do that. And he turns it off. And it's like, oh, now I get it. Okay, people are paying here so you can scare them. Okay, they're paying to be here so that you can scare them, as opposed to doing what you say you're supposed to do, which is to be an investigator, which means an objective, analytical, unbiased analysis of the situation. But it's much easier to scare people. Because I heard Steven, and also I felt Steven in the psychic sense. So I'm a big fan of paranormal investigations. I've been on several, and I'm sure I'll be on several more, but I've yet to see any negative energies. Now, I've seen spirits and encountered ones that are non-human spiritual intelligence. Like in the British Isles, they refer to them as pixies and sprites and leprechauns and fairies, and we all laugh when we hear that. But these are the terms that we've assigned to them. The technical term is that they're the elementals, and they may be more aligned with animal or plant life, or maybe even, you know, the earth and soil and things like that. And I know this sounds all woohoo, mm-hmm. but when you start studying these beings, you realize that there's a lot more members or inhabitants – that's a better word – inhabitants of the spirit realm on the other side than we can even begin to comprehend. And not all of them are human spirits, and not all of them have agendas which are parallel to ours. This does not mean that they are evil. It means that they're different. But once again, people tend to fear what they do not understand. So because I understand something, therefore it is evil. I must fear it. And that's what, once again, evidence of eternity removes fear and superstition from spirit communication, because we are in an era now where we're beginning to develop the technological capability to detect the presence of spiritual energies. And we're going to find out that it is not an alien invasion from another dimension. It simply is another dimension which intersects our own, and it's A-OK.
And this is so fascinating, Mark. You bring up a good point, too, about, do you think, things like plants actually have, spirit energy, other animals? Obviously, you mentioned, dogs before, but things like plants and, actually, you kind of just mentioned it too. Do you believe if the universe is so big and there, there's alien life other places, do you think that there's potentially alien kind of afterlife as well, or do you not believe that at all?
All right. Wow, that's a loaded question. All right, let's start with. Certainly, I believe animals have souls, particularly, all of them, because they all have an energy which makes them alive. Now, plants. I don't know if plants have souls, but something makes them alive. I mean, some energy causes them to grow and respond to sunlight and other things. So that may be what the elementals are doing is dealing with that energy. As far as extraterrestrial life, I think it's sheer human arrogance to think that we're the supreme pinnacle of intelligence and evolution in the multiverses. And I was reading just the other day, I believe it was in National Geographic actually, that in the Milky Way, which is the galaxy within which Earth resides, our solar system resides, there is an estimated 1 trillion stars.
Wow.
And 20% – because of the Hubble Space Telescope and other other means of analyzing stars, pretty much stars have planets. All of them do. And maybe there's some that don't. But out of the trillion stars, the estimate is that 20% of them have Earth-sized planets with the potential of supporting what we know of as life. So 20% of a trillion is a pretty big number. And let's say among that, the possibility of an Earth-like planet is 1,000,000 to 1. Well, that's still several million possibilities of life on other planets. So I think it is naive, if not downright foolish, to believe that we are the only form of life in the universe.
Is it fair to say then that if there are aliens out there, planets from other galaxies, or even our own galaxies, planets from other solar systems, would it be fair to say that they have the same God as us? If you believe that God created everything, would they be under that umbrella as well, and would they be in the same afterlife as us and people that we love that passed away?
I believe that there is one God, and that God is a multidimensional being which transcends all space, time, energy, light, healing. I don't believe that God is a Michelangelo-esque white man sitting on a throne who's neurotic and insecure and jealous and smites people for not giving 10% of their income to a particular religious organization. I think that that's nothing more than medieval superstitious nonsense. But I do believe that there is a God, and that earlier when I was discussing how the pineal gland in our brain is our ability to perceive light, and every great spiritual leader from the Hindu sages in India 5,000 years ago, all the way up through religious leaders today, encompassing Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, Muhammad, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Yogananda, Paramahansa, Billy Graham, the Taoist, Confucius, Lao Tzu. I mean, we could go on and on. The Native American spiritualists all describe God in terms of light. And the near-death experience researchers, many of whom were agnostics going into it, came out of the study believing that there definitely is a God. Okay, but what God is may be so far beyond our ability to understand, yet so simple. For as both Hindus and Christians teach, that when you look in the eyes of someone you love who truly loves you, then you are glimpsing, if but for a moment, God.
Interesting. Very, very well put, Mark. Moving on a bit, and we just have a few more questions to go. It's been such a fascinating and interesting interview, but we do got to kind of wrap things up soon. Switching gears, what are some of the things that you can notice when you first meet someone, when you look at someone new? Does anything? Are you good at like reading people, like their body language and stuff, and getting anything else?
Well, I pick up on things from people, and I tend to either like or don't, I don't want to say dislike, but maybe don't want to connect with some people. But also, Justin, I try not to be invasive. You can always tell inexperienced mediums and psychics because they want to read everyone and they want to probe somebody's energy. But that's like, you're laying in bed one morning and all of a sudden the door flies open and a bunch of tourists come in and start snapping pictures of you when you're laying in bed. It's like, God, that's terrible. Well, psychically, it's the same thing if you start probing somebody. So I also know when to turn my ability on and when to turn it off, because I don't want it on all the time. I gotta get things done during the day, and also want to respect other people's privacy.
What are some of the limitations that you can't do that maybe people have a misconception about?
People think that I'm somehow all knowing and all seeing. And that's a total misconception. Only God is all-knowing and all-seeing. I have insights into certain things and situations.
Okay. Any thoughts on Edgar Cayce?
Huge fan. I'm a huge fan of Edgar Cayce. In fact, I was a featured speaker at the Afterlife Conference at the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach last November. And Edgar Cayce had an unusual ability. He was what's known as a trance medium. In the United States, we refer to this as a channeler, where spiritual entities would communicate through him to give all sorts of healing remedies, foretelling the future. In fact, President Woodrow Wilson used to consult with Edgar Cayce.
Interesting. And that's kind of – I mean, this just kind of popped in my head. But do you think, like the government, the military anyways could somehow – I know they actually worked on this in the past, of like trying to harness the power of like psychic mediums and stuff. And is there any way that they'd be able to, harness – or work with, psychics, mediums to kind of predict the future, predict the outcome of stuff, or maybe, in like wartime to, maybe talk strategy with them?
That's been going on since the 1930s. The British were the first to develop a psychic warfare division back in the 1930s, because the British have always been very advanced in psychic science and psychic studies. Nazi Germany had a psychic warfare division, as do the United States, and then with the Soviet Union and now the United States. And I know that the intelligence agencies of the United States, Russia, Britain, France, probably Germany, China, North Korea, Japan, and Australia all have psychic warfare divisions.
That's incredible. So I guess it's not as
It's not as woohoo and airy fairy as people think it is, because the what the intelligence agencies are more interested in than maybe foretelling the future or communicating with spirits is remote viewing. And remote viewing is where you're able to take your consciousness and observe something happening in real time, whether it's across the street or across the world. And I've been in a couple situations in classes where I've done remote viewing, and it is really uncanny when all of a sudden I find myself, you know, we were doing an exercise where see this person's living room, and I said, all right, you walk in and there's a chair that looks like this here and there and then, and I describe the whole thing, and the person looking at me, their jaw drops. She goes, oh my God, you just described my house to a T. And then, you know, you take it further. And I've also known a couple people in the Defense Intelligence Agency, and that's what they did. They were remote viewers. Pretty intense people. Pretty intense people.
That's awesome. That's a really, really great skill, you know, to have. Mark, are you content with your life now and, you know, where you're at and your plans for the future and kind of like where you're heading? Is there anything you still have yet to do or something that you still have a goal set on accomplishing?
Oh, always. Always. Every day that I have is an opportunity, and I'm always excited to see what's next.
Awesome. Mark, any final thoughts, send-off message, you know, parting words?
Yes. I know that you write for Elite Magazine.
Yep.
And you're the author of the book, Giving Shy Guys Game. I love that. I love that. Well, I want to speak directly to your male audience for a moment and to let them know that it's okay to cry. Recent studies have indicated particularly it's okay to cry when someone you love dies. And as men, we are socialized to suppress our feelings. And crying – it has been found that the tears of grief actually contain a chemical that creates depression. And when you cry, you're literally getting that chemical out of your body. And so it is okay to cry. In fact, there are hormones that create depression and stress. And so when you cry, those hormones well up and they're expelled through your tear ducts. Crying not only purges these chemicals from your body, it also stimulates production of endorphins, which are the feel-good hormones in your body. So crying does not make you weak. It can actually strengthen you emotionally and physically. So if you feel the urge to shed tears of grief for a deceased loved one, do it. It will make you feel better.
What a great tip, man. You know, it's such an awesome way to, you know, leave our audience. And I think you're totally right. You know, children are always crying when they get hurt, when they get yelled at or something like that. It's just like and it's natural to them. It's like when we're younger, we just naturally cry when we have pain or suffering. And, you know, children always get over. They always seem to get over things like that quickly, right? They bounce back and they're laughing a couple minutes later. And I think along the way, you know, adults kind of can't cry anymore. And,
yes.
It's just great because you're right. It's totally it totally helps the grieving process. It totally helps, you know, us get over things and pain. So definitely a great tip, man.
Absolutely. And Justin, I want to thank you for having me on the show. And I look forward to returning.
Thanks, Mark. Take care. And I know our audience is going to love this one. So thanks again, man.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care. God bless.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right. Get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys. That's it. Until next time, take care.